Hello and welcome to this episode of the 21cc podcast, brought to you by the Chartered Institute of Building. I'm Nadine Badu, editor of CM People.
And I'm Justin Stanton, editor of CM Digital.
Hi Justin.
Hi Nadine.
So firstly today, we're talking about ISG and the collapse of the contractor's UK operations. But later in the episode, I'll be speaking to John Dunwell from Morrison Spottiswood. The contractor has grown rapidly in recent months with the addition of ISG's retail team. So we'll hear from John about the expansion and what it's been like onboarding the former ISG employees following a period of real uncertainty. But first, Justin, can you talk me through the fallout from ISG going into administration? Now, the news broke in September 2024, but we're continuing to see the ripple effects right across the industry, aren't we?
It's a sad reminder that the bigger they are, the bigger the impact for the supply chain, and that nobody is too big to fail. Most recent filing at Companies House from the administrator is dated 17th of April. The eight ISG companies had a total of 723 projects at the date of appointment, comprising 539 completed projects, i.e. practical completion had been achieved and a retention balance was outstanding, and 184 live projects, either in progress or the pre-construction phase. When the administrator was appointed, six of the ISG companies held cash balances totaling just 23.4 million. The list of creditors ran to 27 pages in the initial statement of affairs dated December last year. Ignoring intercompany debt and the tax man, there are circa 1,500 creditors, the largest being owed 3.5 million. We'll spare their blushes and not name them. 13 companies were owed a million or more, and at least another 150 were owed six figures or more. A quote from the most recent statement: it is estimated that non-preferential unsecured claims will be in the region of 885 million. At this stage, we do not anticipate that there will be sufficient realizations available to generate a prescribed part amount that would be available for distribution to non-preferential unsecured creditors. So, as expected for unsecured creditors, i.e. ISG's supply chain, they'll get no pennies in their pound. And I think, as is typical when large companies with multiple operating divisions or subsidiaries collapse, there is significant intercompany debt, in this case, to the tune of 252 million. There is good news of sorts. The administrators have realised a total of 19.2 million from trade debtors and retention payments, which exceeds the total director's estimated value of 11.4 million. But let's be clear, that's on a book value of 241.7 million. The administrators note, due to the potential for significant contractual counterclaims, the recovery of construction debtor balances is an inherently complex area and is expected that it could take some years to fully conclude this work stream. Whilst the joint administrators are confident of achieving further significant recoveries, the full quantum and timing remains uncertain and is likely to require legal action in some cases. Another factor to consider, and another number to conjure with, is highlighted by the administrators. I quote, due to the high complexity of the group's IT architecture and infrastructure and the size of the company's electronic data, which totaled circa 800 terabytes of data, the joint administrators required assistance from a specialist team who are experts in data capture, security, and interrogation, particularly as a significant amount of the data was commingled between the group and various other entities within the ISG group. That's a lot of numbers to think about, a lot of statements from the administrator. And I think it doesn't really help for us to state here that there are such things as bad clients and bad business. But perhaps the only lesson anyone who is overexposed to ISG can learn in future trading is bolster your credit control function. They might just be the most important team in your company. I know some salespeople think of credit control as the sales deterrent team, but if a sale ends in a significant shortfall that jeopardizes your future, then that sale wasn't worth the paper it was written on. I've reported on countless collapses across construction and transport, two low-margin, asset-light sectors, over the past 25 years, and the story is always the same when you review the list of creditors. You gasp at how much some companies are on the hook for, and you wonder, did nobody listen to credit control? The follow-up question is, did credit control have all the information available in a timely fashion and report it to the board in a clearly accessible and timely manner? And did the board really want to know? There are still companies out there chasing turnover, and the old adage remains sadly true. Turnover is vanity, profit is sanity.
That is so true, but it's not just the impact on projects and business operations that we've seen following ISG's collapse. We cannot overstate the impact on the people who are working for the company, and then last September, unexpectedly found themselves without a job and without their income. Now, around 2,200 staff were made redundant effectively overnight after 8 companies of the ISG group filed for administration last year. Now, our colleague Christina Largo has done some fantastic reporting over the last few months on the fallout from the collapse. Late last year, Christina spoke to 2 workers who were about to go on maternity leave when ISG went under. One woman, who chose to remain anonymous, said at the time that while she should have been focused on welcoming her new baby and a wonderful time in her personal life, she had instead found herself without a salary, without the company's maternity package, and ultimately considering whether or not to sell her home. In more recent months, we've also seen a number of employment cases brought against ISG. In April, we reported that a former ISG employee had been awarded more than £16,000 after winning an employment tribunal case against ISG Retail. The claimant had accused ISG of breach of contract after being made redundant when the company went into administration. The employment judge ruled that ISG Retail failed to, quote, consult properly or at all with the claimant regarding proposed redundancies. Now, CM did reach out to ISG's administrators, EY, about the case, but they declined to comment.
I wouldn't be surprised to see similar employment cases in the coming months. Obviously, we'll keep you updated with any breaking news on the CM website.
We will indeed. Justin, thanks so much for joining me today.
No problem. Thanks, Nadine.
Great. So on to today's big interview. Today, I'm speaking with John Dunwell, Managing Director at construction firm Morris & Spottiswood. The family-run business is this year marking its 100th anniversary. The centenary comes at a particularly interesting time given the company's significant growth in recent months. Following the collapse of ISG Group, Morris & Spottiswood offered a lifeline to the employees and projects operating in its remit. The company absorbed retail fit-out specialist ISG Cathedral, a move which saved more than 100 jobs. I sat down with John to discuss the ISG deal, as well as the big skills and recruitment issues shaping Morris & Spottiswood and the wider industry. And I also found out if the company has any plans for further expansion this year and beyond. Firstly, John, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. For a bit of context, it would be great to hear a bit about Morris & Spottiswood and your role at the company.
Good morning. Nice to meet you. So Morris & Spottiswood was formed in 1925. It's 100-year-old, third generation, owned by the Morris family. It started off as a joiner's shop in Glasgow. Then it moved into doing some shop fitting. I joined about 12 years ago, and we've diversified a little bit from there. So we sat down and did a 10-year plan, and that was all about how do we do things a little bit differently. So to construction partners. So we thought about a circular delivery where we can deliver everything internally for the client. So over the past 12 years, we've opened different brands. So the reason we've done that is we think if we supply everything ourselves and do as much as we can in-house, we don't, normal traditional companies use subcontractors and then they put a markup on that. We don't need to put one markup. So it gives us an edge. It gives our clients better clarity. We're more competitive and we've got control. So my role in that is really working for the family. I produce the outline strategy to meet their ambition. And then I've built a team around me to manage it. And I support them and ensure compliance and governance and report back to the family.
From your view as MD at the company, what are the big issues that are really shaping retention and recruitment?
Yeah, we've got quite a good retention rate. So we have a 10-year club and we've got quite a lot of people in the 10-year club that we celebrate on an annual basis. Saying that, we do get people leave. The industry is a small pool of labour and that's the risk. People leave because they get a promotion or a step up or they might want to go somewhere else in the industry or down a different avenue. I think well, ours is we treat everybody as a family. It's very much a family business. We don't ask anybody. One of the things in the videos that I do for the staff is we don't ask anybody to do anything that we wouldn't do ourselves or ask one of our family to do. And I think if you treat people right and you're open and honest with them, if they do leave and you can't stop them from leaving, hopefully they'll think of you as a good company and come back. And we do have quite a lot of returning staff. So that's the bit on the retention. I think the taking people on and trying to find people, that's hard. It's the same pool of labour and it's tight. And when people are really busy, when the industry booms, it pushes prices up and it's hard to get them. I think the big thing for me is training. So there's not enough training. I think there's a disparity between colleges and apprenticeships. I think apprenticeships have lost focus over the years. We do train and we do have apprenticeships, but I think with the NI going up and the base rate for staff going up, it used to be if you took an apprentice on over the 4 years, it was almost cost neutral, because first 2 to 2.5 years, it used to cost you money. You're training them, and the last year and a half, they were earning money for you. So it worked out that it didn't really cost you. It was an investment in the first 2 to 3 years, you got that back. But now with the NI and the pay increases, I think it does cost companies, and that's a concern for certainly for the smaller companies. They're not training as much, which then impacts us because we train people and then they offer them a little bit more money, so they'll go there. So that is the bit. It's taking people on that's really difficult.
And you mentioned apprenticeships themselves and having lost focus. Could you give me a bit more detail around that and some of the issues you see?
Apprentices are trained well. I think there's just not enough of them to feed the industry. And I think there's a thing where you can go to college, but they call it an apprenticeship through a college, but it isn't an apprenticeship because you're not getting the practical experience. And I don't think that younger people are getting a fair rub on that. They go to college thinking that they're going to be a joiner or an electrician, but they're not tied in with a company. So they might get all the theory qualifications, but they haven't got any practical experience. And there's a cost to that. And I think that's something that needs to be looked at government level into. There's a disparity between that. People need training, they need practical experience, and that comes with companies not being at a college all the time.
Absolutely. So are there any other trends that you're seeing in the wider fit out and M&E market that just around skills and recruitment?
I think it's the same. It's we talk to other competitors, and I sit on the Electrical Contractors Association as well, and we talk about that at length and employment and things. And a lot of it is focused around apprenticeships and training and getting people in. I'm fortunate enough, I was an apprentice electrician, and that's how I came through the ranks. And it was a big thing when you come from, people used to say you've got to go get a trade. And I think that somehow over the years, that seems to have been diluted. Trades are a really good thing, and apprenticeships are a really good thing. And coming out with a qualification, you can keep that for the rest of your life and go anywhere in the world to work. I think we need to get back to that.
Just touching on that, because we often talk about really setting out for particularly young people coming into the industry, really setting out the huge opportunities that there are. There is not just one path in the construction industry, this idea that everything is kind of muddy boots and out on site. There are so many fantastic opportunities. And I almost feel that isn't always filtering down to the young people in schools when we're trying to engage with them and show them how exciting the industry can be.
I think that's right. We go into schools and colleges as well and talk to them and try and explain. Our management pool is a mixture of people coming through from the tools that we've promoted into it, and also graduates that we've brought in. And they might not be from the construction industry graduate. There might be something else, but we can bring them in and train them if they've got the skill set and the mindset to do that. And that's how I was brought up. You'd be an apprentice, you'd work on the tools, get the experience, and then they'd select you into the office and you'd become a graduate engineer that way, or training, as well as with tech graduates and straight from university and sponsor them. And that's what we try to do in our business as well.
Moving on to the ISG collapse, John explains that his relationship with Kevin Dengate, the former managing director at ISG Retail, definitely helped to seal the deal. A little bit. Can you tell me about your company's recent expansion through the addition of ISG's retail team? And obviously ISG have been in the news a lot in recent months, so this is a big move for Morrison Spottiswood.
So the retail division of ISG, very similar to Morrison Spottiswood, we've known them a long time. They're on lots of the same frameworks and they've got lots of the same clients as us. Out of the ISG, you hear some horror stories, but that is a good business. it went into administration, and obviously people were losing, a lot of people were losing their jobs, and also subcontractors were losing a lot of money on the back of it as well. Having known Kevin a while, I approached him and spoke to him and said, look, is there anything that we can do? We're very similar. We've got a lot of the same clients. Can we help? So me and Kevin sat down and talked it through, and Kevin went away and thought about it, came back and thought it's a good fit. Morrison Spottiswood is a good fit with this team because he runs it as a family as well. He's very close-knit. It's a really good business. So then we went to see some of the clients, some of the mutual clients, and Kevin went to see some of his clients, see if they'd support us. And I think it was truthful to say it was a surprise how many people actually snapped his hand off. I went down to Whitstable to meet the people, and we took on, in a real short period of time, in excess of 100 people in days, not weeks. And that was difficult, but it was worth it, and we brought a lot of work in on the back of it.
And you've mentioned how difficult it is. Obviously, that's a very short amount of time to take on that many new people. Yeah. So what are some of the big challenges in bringing the new mix of people into the business, but also some of the opportunities there?
Yeah, well, so the clients that came over, we had quite a lot to deliver before Christmas, and obviously it all happened just before Christmas as well. So there's 100 people that didn't know our systems, didn't know our ways of working, and I'm really proud of my management team. They all went down to Whitstable, and we stayed down there, and we inducted everyone, we trained everyone, we got all the IT equipment to them, put them all on the payroll, brought all the subcontractors on board that we needed. And got us fit to start doing work on all the jobs and take them back over. It went really well, but you shouldn't underestimate the challenge. At the time, I was thinking, are we going to be able to do this? I was worried. And when I went through, I thought the cash flow drag was going to be on the business. It was substantial for the year end. I thought it was going to take a real hit. That didn't happen. And that didn't happen because we were onboarded with the clients, we were onboarded with the subcontractors. Everybody got paid, we got paid, and it worked out perfectly.
And so what about bringing those two different business cultures together? You mentioned the fact that you run Morrison Spottiswood as a family business, and it's a very similar situation with the former ISG retail team. So can you talk to me a bit about bringing those two cultures together?
The cultures are very similar. So ours is a family culture and theirs is a family culture. I find it really interesting. I went to see Kevin and his senior leadership. They all go out together socially and the mates. And that's how we've tried to build our team. When you go down, just put your mind at ease. There's nobody in there that's in it for themselves. They're in it for the team, which is a great thing. So culture-wise, it was a great fit for us. Everybody's bought into it. Really happy with it.
So can you just talk me through how the leadership team has really helped to maintain that communication and transparency during the process and really address any concerns that existing employees might have or new employees might have? Because it can be it's an exciting time, obviously, knowing that you're moving to a new business, but it can be quite daunting and scary, especially with everything that's happened with the ISG.
And for our current staff as well, you touched on there, people are looking at that thinking, wow, that's a lot of people joining us and a big jump, you know, what's happening? Before all this happened, we did newsletters internally to our team, and I do a video once a quarter, and really it's a warts and all video, it's where we're at, and it's a dead honest, this is where we're at, if we're struggling, I tell people, if we're not struggling, I tell them, because people want to know. I worked on the tools, and I want mortgage, and you want to know where your next paycheck is coming from. And I think you've got to be totally honest with people. So that's something we've carried into this. We do newsletters from each division. There's leadership communication on a constant run. We do group newsletters. I still do the videos. The senior leadership groups, we've started doing more survey questions to employees. And then we feed that back in. I mean, we do get some good things out of that helps us change. You can learn from it. You're better asking people that are living it every day that understand it, and then they can tell you truthfully. We do with town halls, so we started doing town halls through Teams, which I think work. We did the last one, and there was more on than the first time, so they're getting more and more people dialing into them because they can understand where we are with the business, and we can listen to them as well. And then we go back with feedback on lessons learned and things like that. And one of the most important bits for me is getting everybody around the offices and around the site. I do like to see the management around the offices. I like to get around the sites, because I'm an electrician, so I like to wander around and see what's happening.
Has that been one of the main things, trying to bring the teams, whether it's on Microsoft Teams or whether it's in person, getting everyone together as much as possible to try to encourage that team building?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I think it's difficult because there's well over 600 people scattered around the country. So you can't pull all those together at every office because you just grind to a standstill. So it's making sure that communication's right and fit for purpose, really. It is our 100-year anniversary this year, and we are doing some bits. So there's one coming up in London and something in Scotland as well. So we're hoping that people can visit both as well.
Can you talk to me about the main skills and experience the company has really gained through onboarding ISG's retail team? And looking ahead, how this will help to kind of shape the company going forward?
Yeah, it gives us a lot larger footprint and certainly down in London, because we didn't touch that much unless some of our core clients took us down there. So it opens up that certainly the work winning down there, and that's something that Kevin and his team are focused on. So it should give us more work in there, which I'm really pleased with. I suppose the bit for me is don't be frightened. So we've gone on a fairly rapid expansion plan over the last 12 years. I think we were doing 60, 70 million. We're up at 270 million this year. So we've had some growth. And that comes with its pains as well, you know, growing pains. But one of the big things with us was governance and compliance, which is, you know, auto. How do we maintain governance and compliance while we're expanding? And we did go down a big automation program of you know, CVRs and keeping control and making sure everything were, you know, were central. And a bit for me is we bolted on £100 million, in excess of £100 million of the work, and over 100 staff, and we haven't really seen any problems. And that shows me that the automation that we've put in place and the systems and governance and compliance are right. So my message to him is, let's not be frightened now. Let's be ambitious. You know, we've got a growth plan that continues, and I know we can bolt on larger companies if we want to. And keep real good control of it.
And I guess it's a reflection on the great processes and systems that you have, but also a fantastic reflection on the people that you have within the business.
Yeah, the business is nothing without the people. It's, you know, that's how we've built it. You can have all the systems in place, but if nobody fills anything out, it never works, does it? And we have got some real good people in our business.
And so, are there any standout projects that the company's taken on since the expansion?
Yeah, I mean, the thing about us is we do jobs that, really small jobs from a couple of grand right up to, you know, 30, 40 million pound projects. But we did an 18,000 square metre group head office for a leading financial institution right in the centre of London, which, you know, you can imagine how difficult that was. It was what we call a supplier led, where we lead it. It was a full refurbishment of the old building with some off-site joinery. So we did some. We've got a joinery manufacturing shop that we did some joinery in there as well. Full services upgrade internally in the building. Livingston Building Services did the mechanical services in there. Put new fan coils, air handling units, sprinkler mods in, critical cooling, and BMS, all the decks. We did it through the Reba Gateway, and it was a multi-million pound fast-track job. So that's one of the ones I'm really proud of that. Another one was another financial institution where we got the rollout and fit out and refresh a lot of their retail banking network. And I think that's quite interesting. You know, now banks are not like what they used to be. You know, they're not all about transactions. You know, the digital and tech driven. And that's really interesting when you go into a bank now. And certainly I always get told off when I walk in with my wife, because I'm looking at the services and finishes and paints and things like that, and I'm not concentrating on what I'm doing, but I do find them really interesting. And with that, I think we showed that we understand where the banking networks are going, and we gave the client real good information on time and financial control that allowed them to make good decisions in a timely manner. And then another complicated one is a distillery that we're doing. And that's really difficult. It's on the Isle of Islay, it's right on the seafront. Logistics is really difficult on it. You know, I'm really proud of the team that are on that job. It's really complex. If you think about how you can get people on and off the island, you know, it's on 2-hour slots. We've got to program it. There's high winds in there. It's complex. So the procurement and certainly the program timing of it has to be gone through with a fine tooth comb, and things need to be changed, and you need to be proactive and reactive. And the guys have done that. If you think about where it is, the team's integrated itself onto the area. We've employed local people and brought value to the island as well. So I think that's three pretty quick turnaround jobs that we've got on straight away. The team that we put on there were really good. Well, all of them are really good. They've driven that forward. And if you think about it, you know, we're only in May now. So it's happened very, very quickly.
And so working on some of these projects, are you integrating existing people with the former ISG retail team? How does that collaboration between the two different teams work?
Yeah, so a little bit of both, in truth. So on the banking and things like that, people do mix and match and cross them over. On the distillery, that is very much the team that came over from ISG, although they are reporting and we're giving them some help on the financial side. But it does cross-pollinate into the wider business, so much as, you know, the supply chain. Instead of our supply chain just being a supply chain, we want it to be an alliance partnership. So we're partnering with people, and that means that they're embedded in ours, and they want us to do well, because if we do well, they'll do well. That helps us on our tender winning and how we look at jobs as well. You know, anybody can just tender what's on a drawing. It's what else can we offer to the client? What's different, you know?
Just coming back to something you mentioned earlier about the last few months really teaching you not to be afraid of expansion. Looking ahead to 2026 and beyond, are there any other areas that the business is looking to expand into in the future, whether it's specific areas of the business or specific skill sets that you're looking to expand?
Yeah, I think naturally it'll grow anyway. We won't be able to stop it growing just on the organic footprint on there. The big thing for us is we think we've got a little bit of a gap in the Leicester area, so we're looking at either opening or buying something there for the fabric side of it. And then RFM, the FM engineering is a big thing for us, and we want the FM to be more national. So that's something that we're looking at, and that'll be through some organic growth with existing clients through our regional offices, and then looking at the regions to try and expand into the regions. But also, in truth, there'll be an acquisition or two in there.
I'm assuming you can't say anything more than that to me at this point.
No. Brilliant. Unless you've got an FM company for sale.
Unfortunately, I don't. But thank you so much, John. That's been wonderful. And obviously, when there is more news that you can tell us, please do share with us. Thank you so much for your time today, John.
Yeah, lovely to meet you. Thank you.
If you would like to share your feedback on the podcast, you can email us at 21cc@atompublishing.co.uk. And if you're on social media, please use the hashtag 21cc to let us know what you think. That's all from me today. Thanks for listening.